Welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, show number 294, Finance Friday edition, where we interview Cecilia and talk about designing a portfolio with the end in mind.
I think that's exactly where I got stuck, was I started thinking I wanted something, a turnkey rental, a la the rent-to-retirement model, which is I'm just going to give you some money, someone else is going to property manage it, someone's going to send me a little check, and it's going to be not really that much money to give you, maybe give you 40 grand at the most. And then I was like, well, wait a second. Maybe I want this thing that you just described. Maybe I want it to be in Palm Springs where I can Airbnb it and I can go and stay in it. But then that is 100 grand in or 120 grand in. So then I was like, well, you could have both. Am I doing the right thing? And then I froze.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Mindy Jensen. And with me, as always, is my Everything is a Spectrum co-host, Scott Trench.
Wow, Mindy, you really continuum to come up with these great new intros and adjectives for me.
Scott and I are here to make financial independence less scary, less just for somebody else, to introduce you to every money story, because we truly believe financial freedom is attainable for everyone, no matter when or where you're starting.
That's right. Whether you want to retire early and travel the world, go on to make big time investments in assets like real estate, start your own business, or find financial flexibility, we'll help you reach your financial goals and get money out of the way so you can launch yourself towards those dreams.
I like that financial flexibility. I love Cecilia's story today because she truly does have financial flexibility. She has positioned herself so that she is generating enough income that adequately covers her expenses and a whole lot more. And she's conscious about where her money goes without depriving herself. Does she seem like she's missing out on anything? No, she seems super happy.
She's doing great. I mean, she's winning. And let's be real. She, you know, one of the reasons why she's winning is because she has a very strong income and then control over her expenses, right? Especially the low housing payment from having bought a place in California 12 years ago and has that. So she's really got a wonderful situation living in a beautiful place with that's very affordable and having plenty of income to cover that and continue to invest and save. So it was fun to kind of play with a very flexible position and think about how we can make it more flexible and give her even more options to get where she wants to go over the next 5-10 years.
Yep. I think she's got a lot of things to think about. We gave her some things to look into, like, does she really want to diversify her portfolio into real estate? And if she does, what type of real estate does she want to diversify into? So let's make our attorneys happy, Scott. The contents of this podcast are informational in nature and are not legal or tax advice. And neither Scott nor I, nor Bigger Pockets, is engaged in the provision of legal, tax, or any other advice. You should seek your own advice from professional advisors, including lawyers and accountants, regarding the legal, tax, and financial implications of any financial decision you contemplate.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right. Get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
You're trying to close on your next rental, so why is your insurance company dragging its feet? With long lead times and never-ending paper forms, it's no wonder it takes forever to finally get a policy. Modern investors deserve better. They deserve Steadily.com. At Steadily.com, you'll get fast, affordable landlord insurance available online 24/7 in just a few clicks. You can even get next day coverage, which takes just minutes, by the way, to obtain. And you can do it all from your phone. Steadily was founded by landlords who created insurance products tailored to the unique needs of this industry. It's their sole focus, and that's why landlords nationwide consistently rate them 4.8 out of 5 stars. So whether you've got a single family, short-term, or multifamily portfolio, Steadily.com can secure the best coverage at the best price to protect your properties. Discover how Steadily can save you both time and money on your rental property insurance. Visit Steadily.com for a commitment-free quote tailored to your needs today.
When it comes to financial guidance, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When Mindy and I want to upgrade our wallets, we turn to NerdWallet.
Scott's right. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products.
Before NerdWallet, Mindy and I were paying for vacations in cash, missing out on miles, and not even knowing what we're leaving on the table.
But now we're flying through the skies for free, thanks to our new cards with more miles and upgrades than ever.
So if you want more travel rewards, hotel upgrades, or airport lounge access, no matter where you go next, let NerdWallet help you make it happen with a killer travel card.
Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at NerdWallet.com.
NerdWallet. Finance smarter.
As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms of each credit card issuer apply. Cecilia is a 53-year-old divorced mom of two with a great start on her financial independence journey. She could be financially independent right now if she lived in a different country, but a couple of kids, a couple of jobs keep her here. She's looking for some advice about where the right place is for her to put her money. Should she keep paying down her mortgage, save for a rental property, buy a second home, etc.? Cecilia, welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast.
Thank you, Mindy. Scott, so great to be here.
I'm super excited to talk to you today because I think you have some fun challenges. You live in a high cost of living area known as Southern California, where everything costs more.
And then some.
And then some. But in exchange for that higher dollar, you get sun all the time. It looks so beautiful behind you.
Exactly. There's actually sunny today. So good thing it wasn't the other day. Yes. Spoiled. And that becomes an anchor of some kind. But I'm definitely privileged and blessed.
Yeah. So of course, right off the bat, I could say you should move and I could cut all of your expenses right down to nothing if you would just move to the Midwest. Let's do that. There you go. From episode 294. There you go.
And we're done.
So let's look at your income and your expenses. So what is coming in and where are you putting it?
Okay. So I have two businesses and what I do is I draw from one of them. So my income, I pull $7,900 a month. So that's not taxed up, if that makes sense. It's just $7,900 from that business. And then from my second business over the course of the year, I tend to just skim kind of profits off of it at different timings throughout the year. And that lands me an additional anywhere from 50 to maybe even 75K that I pull from that second business, depending on how that business did that year.
Great. And another word we could use for that is distribute.
Distribute.
Skimming, of course, skim, being illegal.
Yeah. Distribute. I try to think of a smarter verb for that. Yes. Yeah. I self-distribute at my own discretion.
Yeah. Perfectly ordinary way to manage your business cash flow. That's great.
Okay. So where does that $7,900 go?
Okay. All right. So walk it through. My mortgage is about $1,600. HOA is $500. Gasoline currently is $240 a month. Utilities, $268. Household, which is kind of a big bucket for me, but that's groceries. That's if we eat out. That's, you know, toilet paper, anything you get at Target, Amazon, movies, that sort of thing is $1,400 a month. Insurance, health insurance, dental insurance is $828. House cleaner, sometimes I turn it on, sometimes I turn it off, but we'll put $120. My yoga studio gym is $122. I put $550 into my after-tax brokerage. Currently with a tutor, which will end in about 6 weeks, $200 a month. New car, new used car payment. So this one's hurting. Plus my car insurance is $600 a month. And then savings, I put $500 just in my like kind of short-term savings. And that's if I charge too much on my Visa that month or something came up for the kids, or if I don't touch it, it pays for my life insurance every quarter. And then my kids' car insurance comes in like once a year. And then right now I'm paying an extra $1,000 on my mortgage.
Awesome. So you're doing a great amount of saving just from your W-2 income. And then on top of that, we have $50,000 to $75,000 after tax that we're able to distribute from your business.
Yeah. When you say it and I hear that, it definitely sounds like a lot. But I can tell you when I first went out on my own, when I left my official W-2 job, so I started this business in 2016. I was not spending like this. There was no house cleaner, no yoga, no gym, no extra mortgage, no money saved, you name it. We went really bare bones. And as the two businesses have picked up, so I haven't been with these kinds of numbers for more than maybe two to three years.
Okay, well, let's look at these numbers because your mortgage payment is $1,500 a month in Southern California. That's amazing.
Yeah, I know.
But then you look at your HOA is $500. And my first thought was, well, move. But your mortgage payment is $1,500 a month. So all in, you're at $2,000 a month. That's still, in Southern California, that's like winning the lottery.
Yeah, it's insane. For a three-bedroom place, it's insane. So I just bought at the right time. It's a condo. But yeah, I bought in 2011. So they were just kind of starting to rise. So yeah, I'm very proud of it. Anybody ask me, I'll tell them in a heartbeat what my mortgage is. I love saying that's how much it is.
So, and because you're in Southern California, the $240 in gas is understandable. Health insurance at $828. I'm assuming that's for the whole family.
Me and my ex-husband each take a kid. So that's for me and one kid. And it's just through the exchange and has gone up every year since I've been out on my own. So I can expect that to continue. It's like $50 to $100 a year it goes up.
Yep. And it will. Expect that. Your car insurance is, did you say it's your car payment too, $600?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So $150 of that is the new car insurance. And then $450 is the new car payment. And I've had that car now for 5 months.
Okay. And then, so with the total listed expenses, I see $7,906. And the total actual expenses when we take out the after-tax brokerage savings and the savings for your kids and the $1,000 of extra mortgage payment, I get $5,800, which is killing it in Southern California. And then if you take out, before we had this conversation, I'm like, oh, HOA, get rid of that. $600 for car insurance, because I didn't know that was a car payment too. Get rid of that. Health insurance, get rid of that. Like if you were living in another place that's much less expensive and you didn't have the expensive car, because I thought that was just car insurance. Like that's another $1,900 you can get rid of. So there's definitely room to improve, but also you're making a ton of money and your actual expenses are $7,900 in Southern California. I still think you're doing great.
Her actual expenses are lower than that. Your actual expenses
are $5,800.
Because the extra mortgage savings and
The savings doesn't it's
Roth contributions. Yeah.
It's an expense, but it's not an expense. It's an investment. Yeah.
I draw from the business. Like when you say my income is $7,900 a month, I draw according to this budget plan. So if I suddenly said, I don't want to draw that much, I only want to draw $6,500, I would just cut all of those extra cushions that I have in there.
What do you do with the income from the business that isn't going into your bank account?
It's sitting there. So right now, my 6 month emergency reserves are in the business checking account. It goes to my, obviously, expenses for the business. And then when I think it's like high enough, like I try, once I get to June or July and I feel like I know how the year is going, then I'm like, oh, I'll take $5,000. Oh, then I might start pulling it and I'll either pull it to fund I'm weird in how I save money. I have very specific buckets of savings accounts and I have them mapped out for the next 10 years of where I want them to be. So I know, for instance, I have like a bridge, one of my after-tax brokerages is like bridge retirement. Like if I need to fund 2 years worth of living, I want that fund to be $175,000. For the next 10 years, I have to put $17,500 in it. And so when I start to pull money, I will fund each of those accounts according to like the map that I have for it. I'm a little weird like that, but I like seeing it in certain buckets.
I like that approach. Okay. I have this goal and I have 10 years to get there. So I would like to have this much money in there. If something happens, I can divert money away and then re-divert it when it's, you know, when the something is over. I like that idea a lot.
And I would like to believe that my two businesses are on a trajectory to continue at least as well as they're doing, if not better. But also I in the back of my head go, I'm the like chipmunk saving the acorns. Like, okay, I just need to have all this, because if they don't do as well in 4 or 5 years, I just want to make sure I'm okay with what I'm doing.
Well, this is going to be fun because you clearly have optionality to cut back on spending. If you can take action across really all of the major levers of personal finance here. You can spend less, you can earn more, you can really go all in building your business or investing in your business, and you can change your investment allocation approach here. So that gives you a lot of options, which can be overwhelming, but also a lot of freedom. Always better to have more options than fewer.
Where's that money being invested?
That's a good question. So in the traditional IRA, most of it is in VTSAX. I do have that with some percentage, maybe 15 or 20% in bonds, just because I feel like I should be, but I know how some people feel about bonds. Most everything actually I keep all this money in Vanguard. So the SEP, the IRAs, the Roth, the after-tax, they're all in Vanguard. If you aggregated those, a lot of it is in VTSAX. And just because everybody's read that book and I decided I wasn't smart enough, and I just, that's where I put it. But there are a few other things. There's some bond funds in there, and there's some, like there's a little bit of VTI and maybe some other things I've kind of heard about and I put it in, but mostly it's in these index funds.
How much is in retirement accounts and how much is outside of that from your investment portfolio?
The traditional IRAs is a retirement account. The SEP is, so if I add that up, 188 plus eight, it's 196 might be outside of retirement accounts.
Great. And then that gives us right? Like 680, 700,000 inside of the retirement accounts.
Yeah. I have other savings accounts that I'm not adding into that. So in the retirement accounts is 587 plus 70. So that's 655, something like that. And then the rest is in a non-retirement account. Savings, random savings accounts, after-tax brokerages.
650 and 320.
Yeah.
Your business emergency fund. I'm interested in that because I think that, is it just sitting in a cash account or a high-yield savings account? Or is it?
It's just in my business checking.
Okay.
And it's. So again, I don't know what the safe number is. I love to have at least 3 months in there. And then lately it's been getting to 6 months or 7 months. And then by the end of the year, it tends to be a lot, but that's why I'm trying to get smarter about, like, if I pull money off of it, I keep 3 to 6 months of my income pull in that account. First of all, is that the smartest place to keep it? But Where am I putting the rest of the money? Because otherwise, if I don't have a purpose for it, then Cecilia has a new patio. She has, like, you know, then I'm buying things, and I don't want to be doing that every year.
Awesome. Well, we've got our investments. We've got like 970,000 or so in these investments, and we've got 3 months emergency reserve, 6 months emergency reserve in the business account, some other cash sprinkled across a couple of other accounts, and then the rest is in basically index funds or similar types of investments, bond investments, across both after-tax and retirement account portfolios.
Correct.
What about property? You have a home.
Correct.
What can you tell us about that and any other assets you have?
Yep. So I have a condo that I refinanced during COVID that is a 20-year mortgage. So I'm maybe a year into that. Crazy property value in California right now. So what is that? I'm maybe 530 in value. So I owe 268 and the value's at 796 right now, which is insane. That's my really my only asset. I mean, I have this car, but the decision was I was supposed to pay this car off. I bought it and then I said in March you're gonna pay it off. And then I got to March and I was like, well, maybe that money to pay the car off should be going somewhere else. And then that hence led me to this call with you all, which is what's the smartest thing to do with maybe, you know, $20,000 or $30,000.
Okay, great. So we have a net worth somewhere in the ballpark of $1.5 million when we add in the house to this, give or take the car on that.
Yeah.
Great. And most, the majority of that net worth, 560 is in your home equity, and then another 600,000 is in retirement accounts with that. So at least two thirds, probably a little bit more, maybe 75% is in retirement accounts or home equity.
Correct.
Okay, great. And what can you refresh us on your goals? What's the best way we can help you today?
Where the quandary that I'm stuck in is there's these buckets of money that I have to do a few things with: pay down the mortgage, pay off the car, or should I be getting an investment property and be figuring out a different way to diversify how I'm investing? And when I started to go down that route, where I got stuck was, am I going to buy a place that's, you know, in the Midwest or in the South, in Alabama or Ohio or Indiana, all these places people are buying rental properties? Or should I be buying it at a place that I might actually want to live someday or visit someday? Maybe Palm Springs or somewhere in Colorado. Like, then I got stuck, because when I start thinking of those secondary places that I might actually want to live or stay, those prices are entirely different than some of the just straight out rental income properties in other places. So a little bit of direction on where could some smart places for this money to go be, if that was a sentence. And then tax strategies. I'm just really curious. My oldest child just came off my taxes as a dependent this year, which was painful. And my mortgage interest really isn't that much. So I'm trying to figure out what are some ways I can have some tax strategy, tax savings, and that a rental property might be the answer.
Can you give us a little bit more clarity on like your long-term goal? What's the outcome that you're trying to back into, you know, a few years down the road?
So I envision myself in anywhere from, I don't know, 4 to 6-ish years being able to be remote with both of my businesses. I do training and a huge majority of it is online. And so if I have great Wi-Fi, I can go live and work anywhere. And so I want to be able to take mini sabbaticals and go to either another country or another state and maybe Airbnb for a month or spend the summer in Spain. Or so that flexibility, I have the funds, I could go do that now, but at some point I want to make sure that my investments aren't all in the same exact thing, and that perhaps rental property might get me some supplemental income that if my expenses, let's say they actually truly are $5,800, well, is there a way I could make that $3,800 and be bringing in a little bit of money to just carve off of what that monthly expenses are?
Awesome. So I might try to simplify that for me in the terms of you want to have a more flexible financial position in the most flexible position you can reasonably get to in a 4 to 6 year period, call 5 years.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, great. Let me just observe a couple of things that I've heard so far about your position and see what you think about those observations. Right now you are doing great from an income perspective. It sounds like this is relatively new in the last 2 years where the income has been this strong, and you also are very optimistic about the prospects of your businesses. You've got control over your expenses. There's nothing crazy going on, but you have layered in a couple of luxuries because you're doing well and you can clearly afford to with that and still maintain a very strong savings rate on just your income, and not to mention the skimming or distributions from your main business there.
Yes.
And then you haven't really, I think, made up your mind about what you want to do from an investment perspective, which is why you put some each month towards your Roth IRA, and why you pay an extra $1,000 to the mortgage each month, and then sprinkle in other investments down the pipeline. Are those fair observations?
Right. So definitely want to be smarter about where that money is going, because I feel like I'm making it up.
And then I also think you have you're doing great with all of this, but I also think you're complicating some of the things around how you think about your cash position. I love that concept, but you have all these different buckets going in there. How much total cash do you have right now?
How are you defining cash? Like, is my after-tax brokerage considered cash?
No. This is money that will be in your bank accounts, checkings or savings accounts,
okay,
including your business account and any household or savings accounts that you have there?
Over 100,000. I mean,
okay, you have over 100. So yeah. I think just saying that and acknowledging that is very freeing to a certain degree, right? There's I think it's just like, okay, great. I've got $100,000 in cash. I don't have to worry about like this bucket not being full or that bucket not being full. Like cash is cash. I'm just going to allocate it across different things here. And that should be plenty to cover your business, personal life, emergencies, a big trip or two or five or 10, and, you know, a couple, any other incidentals that might come up and give you a lot of optionality around moving other things around. So I would encourage you just at a highest level to consider reframing the cash question and just thinking about your total cash position like that, keeping some in the business, some in the personal, and just say, my pile is plenty large right now. What do I want that pile to be at? And everything on top of that, I'm going to sweep out, right? And that'll help you with clarity for your business account too. You can just say, great, I'm going to target 30 grand or 40 or whatever it is you want. And whenever it's above that, I'm just going to sweep it and put it into these investments down the line. I would encourage you to get to a structure like that because it'll make all this decision-making really easy for you.
That is one of the things that I was going to suggest is a research opportunity. Sit down and think, how much money do I need in the business to feel like it's got a fully funded emergency fund? And how much do I need in my personal to feel that I am fully funded there? Because I think that you've got all of that available. I don't think you're going to have to save for your emergency funds. You may have to not skim off the top for a couple of months to make sure that they're totally capped off. But once you have a decision on, you know, what you feel comfortable with, then you can look at what's on top of that. And that's a really personal decision. If it's 3 months or 6 months of business expenses, great. That's your choice. And you can do that because you're the boss. And, you know, another thing to look at is how stable is your job and how predictable is the year? Does your emergency reserve kind of dip in January because nobody's hiring you until the end of March when it pops back up again? And that's the same pattern over and over again. Great. It's okay that your reserves go down in January because in March you're swimming in the cash. You can replenish it. Or is it more of a, I really do need to keep this in here because I never know what's going to happen. And either answer is fine. It's just, you know, this is something that you're going to have to answer. You said that you're not sure if your investments are all the same, and they kind of are because they're all in the stock market and they're all basically index funds, but that's not a bad thing. I mean, if you read that book, I'm assuming you're talking about The Simple Path to Wealth by J.L. Collins, which is the one that preaches VTSAX. J.L. Collins is a smart guy. He's done a lot of research. It's kind of a proven method of the simple path to wealth is investing in VTSAX. So that's not a bad choice. But if you want to diversify your funding, your holdings, rental real estate is a really great way to diversify. Now, do you want to be a landlord? Do you want to have a Midwest property empire that you are responsible for? Do you want to, you had mentioned traveling around and getting something that you can use. You can't use a property that you're renting out long-term, but you can use an Airbnb property when you feel like it. And when you don't feel like using it, you just stick it back up on Airbnb and it rents really quickly. I mean, try to find one right now. It's really hard.
I think that's exactly where I got stuck was I started, thinking I wanted something, a turnkey rental, a la the rent to retirement model, which is I'm just going to give you some money. Someone else is going to property manage it. Someone's going to send me a little check and it's going to be not really that much money to give you. Maybe give you 25, 40 grand at the most. And then I was like, well, wait a second. Maybe I want this thing that you just described. Maybe I want it to be in Palm Springs where I can Airbnb it and I can go and stay in it. But then that it is 100 grand in or 120 grand in. So then I was like,
well,
oh,
you
okay,
could have both.
Am I doing the right thing? And then I froze.
Well, let me ask you this. If you had $1.5 million today, how would you invest it?
You could have both. You could have your turnkey property and your rental real estate.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
just
I'd
because
be buying
you
up those
have
Airbnbs.
Currently stock market investments doesn't mean that you can't transfer those into rental real estate, or, you know, diversify your portfolio by taking some of this and, you know, selling it and buying a rental property. Read the reviews on these turnkey properties and see if that's something that you really want. To hop on biggerpockets.com and read about, you know, my worst landlording story. Because sometimes it's enough to read that story and be like, nope, I'm good. I don't want to do that. And sometimes you can't be swayed.
Heck no.
If you can be swayed by one story, then landlording is not for you. But if you are able to just keep going, like if you're still excited about it, grab a property and, you know, I do the research and all of that. Of course, we're not diving into all of those numbers right now, but, you know, when you get a property that works as a rental property, it generates cash and it's a really great investment. And when you get an Airbnb property, you can go and use it and check it out. And, oh, you know what? This isn't for me. I don't like this anymore.
So I'll disagree slightly with this on the Airbnb side, not in a big way, but my belief is that, you know, I like to vacation in Colorado ski towns and that kind of stuff. I feel that the odds of getting a great investment return in those areas are lower than the odds of getting a great investment return in the area that I know best, which is Denver, or a market that I'm selecting for the maximum possible returns. And my philosophy is I'm going to go and put my money in the place where it's going to perform the best. And then I'm going to spend it in the areas that I want to go and be in with that. Because even if I have an Airbnb in, you know, Beaver Creek or Avon out there and I go and stay in it, I'm forfeiting the $2,000 or whatever it would be for the week that I would be generating in revenue from that. So that's how I like to look at it is I'm going to go wherever I think the best long-term returns are going to be, and I'm just going to spend it on my lifestyle whenever I want to go and travel. And I worry that some of these places that, you know, that happen to be your favorite or my favorite place to go are very good at extracting money from people who did not live in those areas and had owned property or visit those areas, which is probably part of the reason why they're so fun to visit.
Okay, that's a good point. And I will say that I have been speaking with an agent up in the mountains, because of course I would love to have a rental property up in the mountains. And he's been saying, look, they don't cash flow right now. You buy it assuming that it's going to appreciate, but you're paying taxes, you're paying your mortgage. This is a investment that's costing you money every month. So there are secondary locations. If you want to be, I don't even know where Palm Springs is. I know it's in California and that's it. But like, is it on the beach? I don't know. If you want to be like a San Diego on the beach, that's going to cost you a lot more than you're going to generate, but it's also going to appreciate faster. But inland might be still a nice place, or, you know, up in the mountains of California where it's not really a ski place, but it kind of is, or, you know, I'm up in Colorado near Rocky Mountain National Park. You can get a decent property near-ish Rocky Mountain National Park that could be a great Airbnb property that could cash flow, but it isn't. You're not going to get the ski people coming in, and maybe it's not rented every single weekend. So there's secondary markets that could be cool if that's where you want to be. But like Scott said, if it's not a place that you want to visit, then maybe it's not really worth buying the Airbnb, because it's a higher income, but it's a lot more expenses and it's a lot more, like, I don't want to say hassle, but hassle with the cleaners and, you know, people that don't leave on time and lots of things.
When it comes to financial guidance, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When Mindy and I want to upgrade our wallets, we turn to NerdWallet.
Scott's right. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products.
Before NerdWallet, Mindy and I were paying for vacations in cash, missing out on miles, and not even knowing what we're leaving on the table.
But now we're flying through the skies for free, thanks to our new cards with more miles and upgrades than ever.
So if you want more travel rewards, hotel upgrades, or airport lounge access, no matter where you go next, let NerdWallet help you make it happen with a killer travel card.
Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com.
NerdWallet, finance smarter.
As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval, and terms of each credit card issuer apply.
Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers an 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split, with 70% of profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, get paid first. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of the physical asset provide additional security in case of borrower default. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by redirecting your funds from Wall Street to Main Street, supporting local economies and generating profits simultaneously. This investment is reserved for accredited investors, but if you are not accredited, Pine Financial has options for you too. Don't miss this opportunity to back Main Street over Wall Street and start earning passive real estate income. Learn more about investing with Pine at pinefinancialgroup.com/BP. That's pinefinancialgroup.com/BP.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting, from finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets. This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let me try a thought exercise here, going back a second. So I asked, you know, $1.5 million, you know, what would you want it to be? And I'll just take a stab at this personally and see if you react, right? I'm in your shoes. Okay. I just have $1.5 million in cash. How do I allocate it right now? I have none of these accounts or whatever. And I'm going to be as flexible as possible in 1.5 years from now, right? Well, I'm probably thinking I want to have, okay, I'm going to put a third of it to a half of it in real estate to some capacity. And I'm going to have a number of properties probably levered at 50-50 or something like that, 50% debt, 50% equity, which is nice and conservative from a debt financing perspective, but not... but still allowing me to get some leverage on that. And that should generate a good amount of cash. Let's call it $600,000 in equity. So that's $1.2 million in property. Maybe I'm getting a 10% cash on cash or an 8% cash on cash return, which is $40,000 to $50,000 a year. Maybe that's ambitious. Maybe it's $35,000, $40,000 from that, right? Then I'd probably have after-tax stocks, maybe $200,000 or $300,000, and stocks in retirement accounts, maybe $200,000 or $300,000, and a little bit of home equity and $150,000 to $100,000 in cash, right? And from there, I'd be expanding each of those piles. Pretty, you know, that gives me my investments are half in stocks, half in equity, some of which are in retirement accounts, some of which aren't. I've got a good conservative cash cushion and some home equity. Since you know you have. A lot of people like to own their homes with that. And so that would be, you know, what is your reaction to a portfolio like that?
For me, I think deep down, I am anchored in stability. So I like the idea of there's multiple places that they are, and some of them I wouldn't have to think about, and I can just leave alone. So the money for me that's in my IRA, it's like, I'm not putting more into that account. It's fine. If I do the rule of 72, I can see that that account in the next 10 to 20 years is fine, and I'm fine. The other two, then I think I get into, if it's real estate, am I doing it for the money, or am I doing it because I really want to be flexible? I want to travel and I want to be remote. So those have two different avenues to them. And I think actually, if I hear myself say it out loud, it's, I want to be flexible and I want to travel. So maybe it's the money that I would have put down on an Airbnb is my travel fund, or is my build it up to buy that second place that I could rent if I wanted to, but it's not its primary purpose.
Great. Well, let me ask you a question on that. When you say flexibility, you know, I think that real estate's a spectrum, right? So if I'm buying and operating an Airbnb, that's a lot of work. you can buy and operate and then stabilize an Airbnb so that you have a system to manage it, like Ziana McIntyre does. You can also buy a turnkey property, you know, with a property manager, give them some money, and you know, in this case, in the hypothetical situation I just articulated, give the, you know, buy 600,000 worth of real estate, either in one location that's remote or multiple locations, and have property management overseeing them, making that largely passive to some degree, or you can do anything kind of really in between there. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. I like the second one probably. I mean, at the end of the day, do I want to be a property manager? No. I would rather write the check to someone and know it's taken care of. But maybe I just need to get clear on what's the end goal.
So if you can think, hey, in 5 years, I want my portfolio to look like this, that's flexibility to me, then you can back into that.
Yeah.
My instinct is that right now your portfolio is not going to deliver that flexibility, and you have the ability to transform that easily over the next 5 years. But right now, if you keep doing what you're doing, with where your money's going, is every month you're putting $1,000 towards the mortgage. You're continuing to expand your cash position, and you don't really have a formal investment plan behind where that sweep is coming, which is the majority of your invested dollars each year, most likely. And if you can put that together and say, my ideal portfolio looks like this, in 5 years, it's 2.5 million or 2.25, or whatever it is that I'm going to target between appreciation of my current assets and then the extra savings I'm going to generate, and then just begin making that happen. You can think, great. That $2.2 million portfolio, it should look like $800,000 in real estate equity, $800,000 in stocks, you know, $150,000 in cash, $400,000 in my home equity, whatever that is. That's how you can begin backing into that. And flexibility means whatever it means to you. So that might be 100% in stocks that I don't have to worry about at all, and no real estate, or it might be something like what I just articulated there. But right now, if you keep doing what you're doing, your portfolio is going to look like $1 million in retirement accounts, $950,000 in your home equity, and $400,000 in cash and other stocks. And I don't think that is going to get you the flexibility that you're looking for from that. So that's the change that I would encourage to some degree, is to begin allocating the dollars in a way that will get you, that will back you into that portfolio that says flexibility to you.
Yeah. 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 Which I kind of thought I was doing, but it doesn't sound the same. Like I thought through, where do I want to be in 10 years? And what is each of these buckets? What do I want each of these buckets to look like? So if I left that IRA alone and just let it do its thing for 10 years, well, we can assume that that's going to double. And then the SEP, if I imagined based on how much I've put into it each year, what is 10 more years of contribution? But then when we get to the after-tax brokerage, was that earmarked for something? Should I be using that for real estate? Some of them don't really have a particular end in mind versus the number's just going to grow. And then, right? So just being more purposeful, I think, with the more flexible buckets. Well,
one of the tools that I have is I have a written investment plan, because as much as I talk about this stuff, I get shiny object syndrome like anybody else and get excited about this and the other thing. So the fact that I have a written plan that I'm able to review with my wife at our money date keeps it like, okay, great. We got extra cash. That is going here. That is going here. I'm on track to buy that next rental property this year with that. And so I think that will be really helpful as well. Because, and again, the biggest one I would that stands out to me is the extra mortgage of $1,000. You know, you already have $560,000 in equity in your home, right? And in 10 years, you might have the mortgage down to $50,000. That's great, right? But if your goal is to pay off the house, pay it off, right? And apply the cash that can be incredibly freeing. If it's not, don't pay it off, and put it into the investment that you're intentionally picking with that. But right now, I like this kind of like partway approach is saying to me that the flexibility is just not going to come from this financial position until, you know, that until 15, 17 years happen, or however long it will take you to pay it off with a 20-year mortgage and the extra $1,000 there. So I'd either like that's where your investment philosophy can help you make that decision. You can be like, I'm going to either go all in and pay that off, which is an event will happen at the end of that where everything is super flexible. Or I'm going to put it in these other stocks and it's going to appreciate, and I'm going to get I might mathematically get a better return if the market does reasonably well, but I'm not going to have that event. And, you know, there's trade-offs behind that.
Yeah. You're echoing what swirls around in my head, which is like, why am I paying this mortgage? Like, it sounds to me like I'm slated to pay off this mortgage in 10 years when I'm 63. And it just sounded so beautiful to be 63 and not have a mortgage. And then I was like, oh my God, my interest rate is so low. Why am I putting that money there? Well, then I should just pay off this car. But what if I put this money towards the car? I'm not getting like a monthly check. What if I took that same money and bought a rental property, and then I'm getting a monthly check that I could use to pay off the car? Like, I just got caught in this mousetrap.
I think if you write it out, so you'll be able to go down a list. And I would feel personally better about kind of going all in on like this year. I'm gonna pay off the mortgage in 2 years because I want to pay it off. Or I'm gonna stop paying anything extra, and I'm gonna put it all into the next rental property that I'm gonna buy with this place. And in 10 years, I'm gonna still have a mortgage balance, but I'm gonna have $600,000 in real estate equity because it's all going into down payments and into my rental property portfolio equity.
Yeah.
Because it's all going into that. Or I'm gonna put it into index funds. Or I'm gonna invest in my business because my business can grow. But like if you can pick those things and write them down. I just think that this like partway approach that you're taking right now is going to end up in a position where you're going to have, you know, $1.2 million in home equity if things double as you hope over the next 10 years. I'm sorry, $1.2 million in your stock portfolio, mostly in retirement accounts, if you continue doing what you're doing, and then another $900 or $950 in your home equity, and then not much else anywhere else. And again, that to me is that's actually probably pretty flexible. At that point, very simple, paid off property, lots of stock equity and your business. But I don't know. Is that what you want? Nothing wrong with that outcome.
So I'm going to play the what would I do if I was Cecilia game now. Okay. Because Scott said what he was going to do. If I had $1.5 million, here you go, Mindy, here's $1.5 million. I would probably park it in VTSAX, or my husband would be like, no, let's put some in Tesla and QQQ, because that's his like favorite thing right now, VTI, and you know, but basically the stock market. It has done very well for us. Also, my husband does a lot of research on tech stocks. That is his thing. He's not buying automotive industry. He's not buying airlines. He's buying tech stocks because that's where he just loves to research. So that's probably what we would do. But because I am the real estate person that I am, I would make a list of the cities that I would consider Airbnb traveling to, and make a list of the cities that I would consider owning real estate in outside of Southern California. Places like Iowa, because I always ride Ragbri every year, or Ohio, because my mom lives there, or you know, Minnesota, because my cousin lives there. Or, you know, if you've got somebody local that you can trust, that's really valuable. And there are several cities in the Midwest that all have about the same returns. Indianapolis, all the ones in Ohio, Kansas City, Des Moines, Iowa. So if you know somebody there, that's a really great place to put on your list. If you don't know anybody there, maybe skip it because there's other cities that offer similar returns. And then I would find an agent in each one of those cities that I had on my list and say, I would like you to set me up with a search. This is what I'm looking for. I may or may not be making a purchase. I just want you to put me into a list on the MLS. And I'm a real estate agent. This takes me maybe 10 minutes if I have to reset my password, which they always make you do and I hate. It doesn't take a lot of time to set somebody up, to get a list, an automated list. And, you know, give them a maximum price that you want to pay. Give them a minimum bed amount and, you know, minimum bathrooms, whatever, like very minimal search criteria and just see what's coming up. Oh, absolutely nothing comes up. Well, I guess that I'm not going to invest in this city. Or holy cow, 5,000 properties came up. I guess this is a really great city to dive a little bit deeper in or narrow my search. And until you can start to get an idea of what the market is in, for you, I would say A properties, A class. Sorry, I was going to say A plus. A class properties are what you want because you don't want the hassles. You don't want to deal with problems. You want to set it and forget it. It's going to be easiest to find a property manager to take care of your properties when you have an A class property. So make a list of cities that you want to go and get an Airbnb in. Make a list of cities that you want to, that you know people in or would, you know, be interesting for you to own properties in. And just start from there and see what is the market there. Maybe the market is so hot that you're like, I'm out. But maybe the market is reasonable. And, you know, California money coming into other states, you see these properties, you're like, really? That's all that it costs?
You're like, I'll write you a check.
I'm in Colorado when I say the same thing.
I forget if it was during the pandemic. It might have been 2019. I decided that at least every year, and I haven't made good since this first one, I was going to go and stay at an Airbnb in a city that I was curious about. So I started on that track. I went to Boise and I rented a place for a week. I was like, what's the deal with Boise? Why is everyone from California moving to Boise? I got to check Boise out. I think I'm probably priced out of it now, but I went and I looked and like, what is it about here? What is the downtown like? What is the outdoors like? Could I see myself staying here? So I like your advice of what else is on that list for me to go and explore and get a feel for and see what it's like.
Another thing I want you to do is, can you automate any part of your business? We were talking before we started and you do coaching is a good general category for your business, right? Coaching?
Probably more training, but training and coaching.
Training. And is there anything that you can automate? Can you sit down and make just a world-class video that helps take some time off your plate? Maybe your introduction video or, you know, week three of your training program is always going to be the exact same thing and it's not going to change. So you can sit down and automate what you're doing. Even if it doesn't seem automated when you're presenting it, you can automate yourself so that maybe you're at a place that doesn't have super amazing internet, but that doesn't matter because somebody that you have hired, like a virtual assistant or an assistant that is now running the company while you're off traipsing around all these Airbnbs that you want to test out, can take care of the situation and pull you out of it. With your training, it sounds like you're doing it live all the time. And if you're doing it live, then you can't delegate that to somebody else.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. I do have one online course, and I think that is the goal. It's done quite well during COVID. So the plan is, what else can we create that is automated and enroll people in, and it's not attached to my face and my time. So yes, more of that.
Awesome. I think Mindy's suggestions were great there from the real estate perspective with that. To test that out. And then you can just decide if you want that to be a part of your portfolio or not. You don't have to be sure about that future state portfolio today. You just have to move towards working towards what you think that optimal thing looks like and then begin taking the steps to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's more about the places I might want to go and spend time in than it is Cecilia's owns rental property and has a property manager, and every once in a while someone sends me a check for $200. Like, well, I don't really know what that gets me. So being able to have a place where it's like, hey, and I could go to Boise, or I could go to Colorado, or I could go to, you know, maybe a different part of California that I'd want to go to and spend a week a couple times a year. That sounds like it's more of interest to me.
Test it out.
Where exactly do you live in Southern California?
I live in Orange County.
Okay. Is it like near one of the...
It's halfway between LA and San Diego.
Like San Clemente?
So like Laguna Beach. Yeah. Yeah. I live about 7 minutes from San Clemente.
Awesome. So you live in one of the most beautiful places in the world. And your home or condo is probably also a great Airbnb experience.
Well, yeah, you can't Airbnb in my community. I think it's 30 days or more, but that's, I feel like, one of the challenges I have, which is, man, if I cash this place out, you know, I could retire tomorrow. I go to whatever, Colombia or Panama City in Portugal, and I'm done. But I think this property is going to be an amazing long-term rental.
Yeah. I mean, I think
the rental prices are insane.
I at some point will spend a few months in San Clemente or one of those places just to like, yeah, I don't know if I want to live there long-term, but it is one of the most beautiful places in the world. So you've got to play maybe the medium-term rental, where you have somebody rent it out for a month, is a great way to fund, some of those Airbnb experiences as well, while you're traveling and picking the locations that you do want to buy in.
Yeah. So swapping time, getting someone to stay here for a month or 3 months while I go somewhere else for a month or 3 months.
Yeah, that would help you, because again, you have this enormous asset. It's a third of your financial position that is not being harnessed right now in pursuit of that flexibility. It will probably cost you, you know, less than $10,000, you'd think, to reset or reframe or block off a section or whatever it is of your house to make that an available opportunity if you're really planning on doing lots more travel and flexibility.
Yeah. And sometimes I get tempted by that equity too, to have that equity work for me, and like, gosh, could I borrow, fund, skim that equity and do something with it as well?
Sure you can. Although a home equity line of credit, I like to say, is a short-term solution. Short-term funding solution. Scott likes to say that too.
Well, that's where I was kind of talking about earlier. If I was kind of redesigning the position from scratch for me, I would be thinking $600,000, $700,000 real estate, another that amount again in stocks and bonds, $100,000 or $200,000 in home equity, maybe $50,000 to $100,000 in cash, rounding out, and that stock position across both tax advantaged and after tax accounts there. And so that would be, you know, that would be like, again, one starting framework. You don't have to take that one to think about the position. And that would, you know, great. If I wanted to get there tomorrow with your position, I would cash out, refi the house, use that to buy some rental properties there, generate that cash flow and go. That might be a really scary move because of the way that you've set up your position, or not appropriate for various reasons. But that would be the position I'd be thinking about building towards if I was starting from scratch. It's the position I tried to build for myself when I got started.
Oh, I like considering that definitely, because when I think about paying the mortgage off or not, it contradicts me saying I'm in the hottest rental market. I could rent this condo out so easily for so much money. And then I'm like, why wouldn't I just get someone else to pay that mortgage down? Like, why am I paying it down? So if I refinanced and took money out, my mortgage, God forbid, went from $1,500 to what, $2,000, and then someone else down the line is paying that off for me, then I'm like, okay, Cecilia, what are you doing? Like, there's probably something smarter there.
If I was going to be Cecilia, I wouldn't pay a dime towards that 2.625% mortgage rate that you have. I wouldn't pay a dime extra. I would keep it as is.
I agree completely, unless my goal was, I'm going to pay this thing off, and now my mortgage is zero. I'm just paying taxes and insurance on that thing, and I'm going to use the asset as an Airbnb. It's not the most optimal way to drive return on equity necessarily, but it's very freeing to have no mortgage. So no wrong answer. Yeah. And you're kind of part way in, part way out with the way you're handling your mortgage.
I got to put in both pots.
There's indecision there, and there's no wrong answer with that. There's this, there's the math, and there's the safety. And
I think what I'm pretty good at is, once I decide what I want to do, I do have discipline to hit towards it. So me deciding, okay, this is a 10-year plan, this is what you're doing. We funded it last year, we funded it the year before. Like, okay, so now I think once I work on crafting a written plan and putting it down, incorporating exactly what is my goal, then I think it's easy for me to make a decision like that and stick with it. So it's the, you know, the vacillating when I'm stewing over things that gets me. But once I decide, I think it works.
Awesome. Well, let's recap where we've kind of talked about today. You have optionality across spending, across earning more income. I'm sure you're doing what you can be to continue to advance the income from your business and your job. I think that you're crushing it. You've got a $1.5 million net worth, lots of good options and all that. And the biggest thing is getting more decisive and crystal clear about that future state portfolio that you want, which may take time, may take a few months and some iterations before you get to where you're feeling comfortable. But once you do that, then taking all of your surplus cash and moving very methodically down that list of priorities to get to your desired future state.
Yep. I think we have a couple of research opportunities to look into places to live and what your end goal is. I think that you also have kind of decided that maybe being a landlord isn't the top choice for you. So traipse around and check out different Airbnb properties and see, you know, the cities that you like and see, you know, are there secondary cities that might make a good income and also be a place that you want to spend time. But I think you have a lot of good options ahead of you. And now it's just like, which one of these amazing 50 options do I choose?
Well, if they involve traipsing, I think I'm in.
There you go.
I'll make that the
Thank
headline.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. I think the travel bug, you know, I think maybe as a parent, when you see the kids ready to just take their wings and fly, and then you're like, that's so freeing for them. And you're like, wait, it's so freeing for me. Where can mama go?
Exactly. Okay. Well, Cecilia, thank you so much for your time today. This was super fun, and we will talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you so much, Scott. Mindy, appreciate it.
Okay, Scott, that was super fun. That was Cecilia and her super awesome position. And I think that we gave her a lot of wonderful things to think about. The research opportunities into, does she want to do real estate as a landlord or real estate as an Airbnb proprietor? Is that the right word? Does she want to truly diversify her portfolio, or does she just want to traipse around the world staying in Airbnbs as she Airbnbs her own place?
Yeah, I think, you know, Cecilia has a strong, flexible position. She spends less than she earns. She has optionality to flex up on the income front, flex down on the spending front, and transform her portfolio and think about how she wants to invest across various asset classes. And world's her oyster. So she's got all the options in the world. I think she's going to do a really good, I think she has a bright future ahead of her. And I think she just needs to get really clear about what she wants, when she wants it, and what portfolio she's going to design to get there. Because right now, I think the portfolio, in spite of her great strategy, I think it's happening to her rather than she's actively shaping it the way that she wants with an end state focus in mind.
Yeah, but it's got a pretty good end result so far. She's doing pretty good with that.
Absolutely.
You know, Scott, sometimes when you have so many options, it can be a little bit daunting. So I think we gave her a lot of great things to choose from today. A lot of things to think about, a lot of things to contemplate. I'm also excited. Maybe we can have her back and talk about her business. I'm excited about the opportunities for her to remove herself from her business, generate even more income, and then maybe not even worry about the Airbnb and the real estate.
You know, I just thought of something. I think this would be a fun thing for the Facebook group. Let's start a thread. And I would like to, you guys heard mine. I would like to hear what your ideal $1.5 million portfolio would look like if you could just start with a blank sheet of paper and allocate $1.5 million across various asset classes. What would you do with that? And I'd love to hear. I think that would be a good discussion and see what people think.
Well, JT, I am going to actually remember to put this in the Facebook group. I'm going to make a calendar invite so I don't forget. So in the Facebook group, you will find a question at the very top at facebook.com/groups/BP Money. What would your ideal $1.5 million portfolio look like? How would you allocate it into what asset classes? And if you're going to talk about, oh, I'd put it into real estate, tell us what location you're investing in real estate in and what type of real estate you are investing. Okay, Scott, I think that's a great question.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to seeing what the responses there are.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. Okay. Are you ready to get out of here?
Let's do it.
From episode 294 of the Bigger Pockets Money podcast, he is Scott Trench, and I am Mindy Jensen saying, catch you on the rebound, hound.
The market is changing. Finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market. It's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals. Enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.